Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world? So welcome to the 549th edition of SDG, and it's titled 2022 Endgame Update Number 13. So stay tuned, folks, and then later in this message, we're going to tie it all into walking in the Spirit and not in the flesh. You know, the Bible says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 19, quench not the Spirit. So stay tuned to learn how we the people of this great nation, this world, and God's creation are being attacked by the prince of this world and his perverted minion, especially when it comes to sex. Yes, folks, sex. Sex is a weapon of our enemy. And the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. We're just God's people simply passing through. So, folks, I encourage you all to refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity, and stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which, like I say every week, are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as always, folks, before we get into our news update, let's review something from a past episode. Now, we've talked about this this whistleblower. Her name was Dr. Lei Mengyan. We've talked about her back at the beginning of COVID-19 scamdemic. She was talking about how this was designed in a laboratory in Wuhan, and it was not from a bat. And then she came out earlier this year, and she was talking about the Marburg hemorrhagic fever. And J.D. Rucker, a Christian researcher and podcaster who's on his game, folks, and very much on point, was talking about all this. Now, the thing that's crazy about it is, at first glance, it sounds almost anecdotal. It sounds out there, you know? Crazy conspiracy theory. But I want you to listen to it. We played this clip a month or so back. Actually, during the Winter Olympics in Beijing, there was a concern that they had infected all the Olympic team members. They were going to go back into their countries. It's a 3 to 4 week incubation period. And then we'd have this crisis. Well, that didn't happen. But that doesn't mean that this wasn't informative. This doesn't mean that that didn't have value. So let's just listen to J.D. Rucker's take on Dr. Lei Mengyan's warning to humanity concerning hemorrhagic or Marburg. Here it is.
And also, intelligence shows China also would launch such bio attacks during the Winter Olympics. That's why they put the athletes and participate in the bubble. So this all this plan, and not only that, they pass all these things with different tactics, like they create more troubles all over the world in this area. If you check, China has caused a problem with Russia, with other countries and Africa, whatever, give trouble to the world. They promote the problems all over the world, and then they also will choose the right chance to launch the other bioweapon. So basically, they have the, they think, they believe they have found the target for therapy of one group of this hemorrhagic fever virus. And this is called, I have identified, also verified there, this kind of intelligence. It's called CD38. It is an enzyme which exists when, in patients if you get infected by such virus. So China believes this is a target. So they are using Johnson & Johnson's anti-CD38 cancer drug to repurpose it secretly to prepare to treat such disease. And now we can talk about the UK hemorrhagic fever case. And we are still...
Before you do that, I want to recap because you just said a whole lot of stuff. I want to make sure that I'm understanding and I want to make sure the audience understands it. So just to be clear, you're telling me that there is this new bioweapon that has, you know, been by new, I mean new to us. Maybe they've been developing it for a long, long time. But there's this new bioweapon from the CCP, this hemorrhagic fever that it causes. And they have been testing it. They have perhaps seen it in the wild. And they have possibly, or maybe you're certain, they have unleashed this during the Beijing Olympics in order to spread it around the world. Meanwhile, they have the antidote, which is a Johnson & Johnson cancer treatment that they've repurposed as a way to treat people with this. Did I get that all wrong, or am I close?
Yes, exactly as what you summarized.
Okay,
they prepare the secret antidote, and even Johnson & Johnson may not know this drug can be repurposed to treat hemorrhagic fever.
Okay, so there you have it. That was J.D. Rucker speaking with Dr. Li Mengyan in her new report out there concerning the Marburg virus, hemorrhagic fever. And now, this just out from thesun.com. This was published. Chinese agents tried to kill me with two poison fried eggs after I tried to expose truth about COVID, says scientist. So this is a article or a report given to The Sun by Dr. Li Mengyan, and she talks about how, this is her claim, it hasn't been proven, that Chinese agents tried to poison her with a breakfast that her husband prepared, cooking her eggs with some sort of poison.
Gosh. Golly.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's strange, Gomer, but hold on, it even gets worse. So the Gateway Pundit comes out a few days ago with this report that the University of Pennsylvania's China connections and the alleged attempted assassination of Chinese whistleblower, Li Mengyan, that we just talked about, has a connection. So we know her claim that there was an attempt poisoning on her by her husband, Dr. Ranawaka APM Para, and she reported this information to U.S. authorities, and she said that I believe the Chinese Communist Party tried to poison me after finding out I was going to the U.S. Now, her husband refused to leave China with her, and after arriving in the U.S., she's been receiving all sorts of anonymous death threats. But here's what's going on, and here's where it gets really interesting. What happens here is that the Chinese use a program of bribes of all sorts of officials, from the media to institutions of learning to government, and it looks like the University of Pennsylvania has been corrupted by the Chinese money. They have a group out there, and I want to get it up here. It is called the... Don't see it. EMI, Taylor Truth. It's their infectious disease group. And Dr. Susan Weiss is in this group. She's heading this group. And she has been supporting the Chinese Communist Party narrative all the way back to September 2021, or actually January 2021. And she has been out there claiming that this has no lab origin, this being the coronavirus. And when you start to follow the money, you see that there's some very strange things going on here. Folks, the Chinese Communist Party, they undermine the United States through this program that Beijing calls elite capture, and that's what I was alluding to. This is where American business, political, and academic leaders, they're offered these sweetheart deals, better known as bribes and other benefits, to just turn and look away as the Chinese Communist Party corrupts these institutions, creates narratives, opens doors in Congress for all sorts of legislation which will favor the Communist Party. So now we have the University of Pennsylvania not only pushing men to compete against women in sports, but now they're shunting millions of dollars of this dirty money from China to their infectious disease group. And it's corrupted, folks. Our entire institutional system, and I'm referring to everything from the media, government, education, finance, it's been corrupted by dirty money. So these people who have been bribed are helping Jinping cover up his crimes against humanity and move or advance the Chinese agenda. Plus, let's not forget the field of medicine. There's so many Chinese nationals now employed at all these prominent medical institutions around the country, even my wife's ophthalmologist. This group purchased a local ophthalmologist, purchased his practice when he retired, and he was well known. People flew in from all over the country to have eye operations done by Dr. Genovese. Very, very prominent physician. I actually had some work done on my eye by this man. Well, this group comes in, buys up his practice, and most of the people in the group are Chinese. Now, I have a theory on that, folks, and I believe they're all spies doing the bidding of the CCP. Sure, they're physicians. Maybe they're a businessman. They own Chinese restaurants or whatever. But I believe that they apply for these positions. They come and start businesses. They have these entities which are all upfront legit. But I think a lot of them are actually Chinese operatives. Sleeper cells. Been my theory for years, folks. But we have to keep moving. Right now, it's time for Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist. It is a heist, folks, a big scam. That's all I can really call it. Now, you remember last week I told you I went to the doctor for the first time in years, you know, after I had that terrible bio attack on my body with the spike proteins, and I have those antibody counts that are up pushing the upper limit of the test. I visited a doctor. Terry wanted me to do this so that we have somebody we can call if we need an antibiotic or somebody to check out something on us. But, you know, I'm not a big advocate of these institutionalized physicians. But that's another story for another day. Remember, she looked at my blood work and I said she saw my antibody level at 375 and said, well, you're immune to COVID. And then at the end of the visit, I got the UPMC company spiel on vaccines. And I should consider at least getting one COVID. Well, why, lady? You just told me 5 minutes earlier that I was immune to it. Well, we know that's all marketing. However, there's something very alarming. She also, and I mentioned this last week, she wrote me a script to be tested for HIV. Did you hear me, folks? HIV and hepatitis C.
What?
That's right, Paul. Now, you want to know why? Well, here's why. The mainstream media and the CDC have finally admitted the problem. But in the admission of the problem, they're leaving out the giant elephant in the middle of the room, so to speak. So last Thursday, just the day after Joe Biden, the imposter in chief, tried to pull the wool over the eyes of the American public, and he tweeted this with his snake, serpent, forked tongue. I know that families are still struggling with higher prices. I grew up in a family where if the price of gas went up, we felt it. Oh, and don't get me going on the price of gas, folks. One day, I saw the price of gas here in Western Pennsylvania go from $4.15 a gallon to $4.39 a gallon in one portion of a day. These numbers are insane. But the reason, and this is out of Biden's post, let's be absolutely clear about why prices are high right now. COVID and Vladimir Putin. You know, these are scapegoats that the banksters are using because they've printed trillions of dollars. In fact, up to this point this year, I think they've done $6 trillion. Couple that with all the trillions of dollars printed back during the last quote-unquote economic crisis in 2007, 2008, where the too-big-to-fail banks needed some more help, and we had what we called TARP spending. Let's not forget about Bernanke's helicopter money. Well, that's what they're doing right now, folks. And then you have Biden CDC. The day after all this, you know, dog and pony show came out, the Biden CDC puts out this warning about a mysterious hepatitis outbreak in young American children. Did you hear that, folks? Now, UPMC wants me to get tested for hepatitis C, and they're seeing this mysterious hepatitis outbreak. So once again, they're trying to pull the wool over the American public's eyes, the same way Biden did with this lying narrative concerning inflation. And they're claiming that this mysterious liver disease is hitting young children, probably because of weakened immune systems from the lockdown. Folks, can it get any crazier than that? No mention of the fact that countless millions of children down to 5 years of age, and I don't know, did they open up the vaccines for the jabs or the death jabs for the children younger than five? I haven't been keeping up with that. So no wonder people don't trust the government anymore. I mean, you have this 800-pound gorilla sitting in the middle of the room, and they're trying to blame it on lockdowns? So the Daily Mail reported this, and according to CDC, all these weakened immune systems in American children, these liver diseases that are spiking, well, they're somewhat normal for people who have been locked down for so long. Really? What would cause that? Why don't they talk about the vaccine in the VAERS report? You know, the problem is they're noticing clusters of these. And if this was a lockdown thing, you know, most of the country was locked down, wouldn't you see this across the nation? No, these children aren't being affected with hepatitis because of a lockdown. They're being affected because they have the death jab. Now, the people commented on this, some of the top commenters, here's some of their comments. The CDC is about as trustworthy as CNN. How many of these children were vaccinated? Here's another one. The CDC is a deep state organization whose objective is to control your mind so that you obey government orders. 5G, now, keep this in the forefront of your mind. 5G is a stealth mechanism so the government can spy on you. And I'm going to add, trigger the latent technologies that reside in the death jab. And you'll hear more on that later. The JAB has consequences. The jab, you know, and people spell that out because a lot of these AI programs wipe out your posts or your tweets or whatever. If parents are jabbed, they can spike their kids from shedding these spike proteins. And that's been fairly well documented too, folks. And here's a final one, toxin exposure. Now, where, oh, where could they have been exposed to a toxin recently? So I suppose if you dig into that CDC explanation, they're going to say, well, that's from the dirty air in homes, you know, from all of the plasticizers and other things volatilizing off the carpet and laminated flooring and what have you. But no one wants to look at the major toxin, which is injected in all these children's arms. So I suspect that they're testing hepatitis C, and there's no charge to me. They're doing this, folks, so they can create a database. And then the HIV, well, here's where it even gets better. there's this technology known as a mRNA. And there are these side effects coming up right now, which they call VADs, vaccine-induced immune deficiency. And it's popping up all around the country. Now, the CDC sent out these nationwide alerts asking doctors to be on the lookout for this unexplained hepatitis in children and these mysterious cases of VADs. Why are people having this sudden immune deficiency? Well, let's see what the internet has to say about it. So I went out and I Googled it, literally, on the Google search engine, and nothing came up, except all these fact checkers debunking it. Then, if you go to DuckDuckGo, you get some really interesting hits. And on the third hit, you get this investigation of the COVID-19 vaccine cause of AIDS/HIV. And here's the evidence. Now, I'm going to get into that more after I cover this interesting relationship that's being seen by a researcher that was on, what show was he on? Yeah, I don't have, he was on with Steve Kirsch. So this is Panda's Mark Giridot, and he was on with Steve Kirsch. About a 5-minute clip. Just listen to what Mark has to say on Steve's show concerning COVID vaccines and this hepatitis outbreak that we're seeing right now.
All right. Hi, Steve Kirsch from the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. I'm here with Mark Giridot from Panda, and I'll have Mark introduce himself in a minute. The purpose of this video is to talk about a paper that Mark just sent me that basically says that the vaccine can cause hepatitis. And I think, Mark, you can talk a little bit more about that paper when we get to you. But the this then triggered a conversation between Mark and myself to say, gee, maybe these cases and hepatitis have been reported in the U.S. And in Europe are due to the vaccine, because these are being seen in kids in both countries. There isn't a uniform explanation for it. There's some theories, but there isn't an explanation for it, and the vaccine has been ruled out. There is some evidence where it claims that the kids have not been vaccinated, so that would sort of eliminate maybe some possibilities if, in fact, the parents are telling the truth. So it's always hard to know. But the paper triggered this conversation between Mark and myself, and the interesting insight that Mark has is that it's not the spike protein per se in the vaccine. And we'll just back up for 1 second and say, when you get injected into your arm, what happens is that these lipid nanoparticles in the vaccine, they go and travel through all parts of your body. They'll go into your brain, they'll go into your heart, they'll go into your liver, they're going to all your organs. And what happens is that when they enter into the cells, they will then express the spike protein on the surface of those cells. And a big part of this is your whole blood vessel network, your circulatory system. And so when the spike protein, when these lipid nanoparticles go in and they express the spike protein, this causes then your immune system to attack these endothelial cells, these blood or blood vessels, throughout your body. And these are blood vessels in your brain and so forth. And so the blood vessels in your brain actually protect your blood-brain barrier as well. And so there's a breakdown. The breakdown of the blood-brain barrier that happens is actually not being caused by the spike protein itself, but by the immune system then attacking these blood vessels, causing scarring. It then heals what blood-brain barrier then closes again, but it can be damaged and it can let in all sorts of contaminants in the meantime that aren't supposed to be there. And those can cause things like autism, dementia, Alzheimer's. We also talked about hepatitis as, hey, what's going on is that these lipid nanoparticles, you know, express the spike protein in your liver, and then your immune system goes and attacks your liver, causing hepatitis. And so it's the same thing for myocarditis entering your heart, causing your immune system to attack your heart and creating this damage that increases your troponin levels and so forth. And so all of these things that we're talking about, you know, a huge variety of symptoms, autism, dementia, Alzheimer's, hepatitis. I mean, the Alzheimer's autism, for example, probably aren't directly being caused by that attack, but they're being caused by the damage to the blood-brain barrier that is now breached, that then allows things to happen that wouldn't happen. So the point is that these vaccines, which are labeled as safe and effective, we've never had a vaccine which has gone through your circulatory system and transfect cells like these ever in human history.
That's the real question I have. I have doubts. If you look at the I think you described it very well. Okay, the transfection, any vaccine that will transfect, and if that transfection occurs outside of the muscle, i.e. in, you know, it goes from the muscle to the lymphatic system and then into the blood. Once it's into the blood, it's circulating essentially into the blood, and it's going to transfect into those endothelial cells that protect, that are linings that protect our blood vessels. The MMR vaccine also transfects because it's an attenuated virus. So it's a living virus that do not replicate. So it's bringing a foreign genetic material inside one of your cells. And when that occurs, the immune system has multiple ways to identify that and destroy that as if it were SARS-CoV-2 virus or the flu virus contaminated that cell.
So there's about the first 5.5 minutes of this interview. It's about an hour long. It's very much worth listening to. And Mark said some very interesting and relevant points there concerning the damage the spike protein causes. And it's an indirect sort of causation. So first you have the injection. You have these lipid nanoparticles. LNPs are what they're called in the technical world. And they carry the mRNA instructions into your cells. Now, if you didn't have that nanolipid sheath around the outside, it would be destroyed by your immune system. So this was some of the technology. And then they put a T-cell suppressor in there, which may be explaining this spike in cancer cases. That's a separate story. He didn't cover that, but remember we talked about that here too. So these transfected cells then migrate all around your body. They don't stay at the vaccination site like they claim. They go all over your body. They attack everything from your liver to your GI tract to your various organs. They even cross the blood-brain barrier and attack your brain. So the point is that we have these increases in hepatitis being reported in 11 countries around the world. Remember, we've talked over and over and over again about all of the young men in their 20s to 40s that are suffering all kinds of heart conditions. Well, that's just one of the attack sites, one of the vectors that these spike proteins are attacking in that particular demographic. Now we have these children who are having their livers attacked. And let's suppose that you're an elderly person. You got the jab and you have some confusion. So your weak link in your body or your system is your mind. Well, the spike proteins attack your mind. So I'm telling you, folks, there's a lot more information in that clip. And you can catch that on Steve Kirsch's Substack page if you'd like to listen to it. So remember, before we played that, I was talking about going and searching on Google for COVID vaccines and HIV. And when you do, like I said, all you get are these fact-check debunking articles. But when you go to DuckDuckGo, you get some very interesting differences in what the search engine finds. And that's because they're not operating under a suppression algorithm. And that's the point here, folks. So on the third article or the third hit, you get this investigation into the link between COVID-19 vaccine costs and AIDS HIV. And there's a ton of evidence here. It's a blog called Sunny Land Blog on WordPress.com. She put this out back in February this year, February 14th. And it's basically a synopsis blog where she links all these other articles. And she shows the interesting relationship between the HIV and jab. And you can read it in this article that she links to on Telechannel, where she has Professor Luc Montagnier, he's a Nobel Prize winner, stating that COVID-19 was created in the lab. Then he goes on to talk about how the DNA sequences also possess an HIV linkage. So that's in this lab engineered technology. Now here's the shock, okay? There's a article, I don't know if you want to call it that. Yeah, it's in Business Week. It's Moderna's next act is pushing HIV vaccine and cancer vaccine. That's the new hot trend. And this is in Business Week from a year ago. And I'm just going to read the headline here, or the actually first sentence or two after the headline. Moderna Inc., which was an unprofitable company with no market experience, but a promising and totally unproven technology. That's the mRNA technology. That's what Moderna stands for. None of its experimental drugs and vaccines has ever completed a large-scale trial. And the experts were divided on how well the mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccine was in terms of efficacy. And they were about to enter a phase three trial and how it would stack up to the older, more established vaccine technologies, you know, had it gone that far. And then all of a sudden comes the plandemic and all the emergency use authorizations. And the rest, folks, is history. The American public, the public of this world in general, have become the phase three trial. Years for this information to come in. So here you have it from a Nobel laureate, Professor Luc Montagnier, stating that the HIV virus is in the coronavirus gene. It was created in the lab, and there is now a spike of these VAERS, or vaccine-induced acquired immune deficiencies. Remember, just like COVID-19 are the manifestations that come from the SARS-CoV-2 bioweapon, that same thing is what happens with HIV. So that's the bioweapon. And then the manifestation, the aftermath of the bio attack from either SARS-CoV-2 or HIV would be COVID-19 or AIDS, respectively. Well, now you have this vaccine-induced acquired immune deficiency, and it's sweeping across the world. So now do you see why UPMC and these other big medical monopolies are creating these databases to track both HIV and hepatitis in the population? You can't distinguish between HIV and, well, I said that wrong. You can't distinguish between AIDS and VAIDS by these tests. And they want to see where this HIV is manifesting in the population because it was in the linkage of the jab from the mRNA technology. And hepatitis is being triggered by all these attacks on the liver by the spike proteins. But enough said on that, folks. We have a lot to cover here, and it's time to move on to our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. The Japanese commies solve. Boo means dance. He means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slam or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flattened curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
So remember, folks, I opened the show talking about Dr. Li Mengyan. We played her interview with J.D. Rucker earlier in the year where she was warning that the Chinese have another bioweapon ready to release. It's Marburg or hemorrhagic fever. Well, then just this week, Jeff Prather had a segment on one of his podcasts concerning 5G and the Marburg release. So in this clip, what I'd like to do is just have you listen to Prather and his guest. And boy, I didn't write down his guest's name. I apologize. But you can get this on jeffreyprather.com. Just look for the podcast he did this week concerning the Marburg 5G release. It's a 3-minute and 15-second clip. Just listen to the information here that the mainstream media wouldn't touch. And you got to wonder why.
The bioweapon was engineered as a PSYOP and as an economic battle weapon, COVID, for the jab to be brought in, not the other way around. And then the boosters are boosting the operating system
yep.
with the graphene oxide hydroxide through the vectors of the 5G and directed energy weapons do. But they are going to go into that in detail. And from there, I will turn it over to you to start, Todd.
We know that Marburg is not particularly contagious, but it has an extraordinarily high rate of fatality. And we know the mechanism by which this will be released. And that is inside of these shots that people already received, inside the lipid nanoparticles, the hydrogel, there exists pathogens inside of the particles that have not yet opened. Those pathogens are chimeric. They include E. coli Marburg, Ebola staphylococcus, and brewer's yeast, amongst others. We know that upon the broadcast from the 5G system that is now employed across the United States and the world for that matter, when they broadcast an 18 gigahertz signal for 1 minute, three different times as a pulse, it will cause those lipid nanoparticles to swell and release these pathogenic contents, thereby causing a Marburg epidemic that they've already spent the money on. It's already done, right? The Marburg epidemic for purposes of the law has happened. And now we just need the actual disaster to happen. And there's actually worse parts to it than that, including the 1p36 gene deletion that effectively will turn those poor people into zombies. As odd as that sounds, our government's preparing for that.
But the FEMA have already put out zombie commercials and
yep.
CONOPs on that, correct?
That's correct. If you look at CONPLAN 8888, Stratcom put that out in 2011. On page 2, they say, oh, this is just for examples, just for demonstration. You know, don't worry about it so we don't offend other countries. The problem with that is you look through that con plan, it's all about 5 different types of zombies. There isn't anything in there about opposition forces. There isn't anything about winning political battles or counterinsurgencies. It is only about a zombie apocalypse, defending it. And you will see that every NIMS-compliant, practically, agency, or whether that's state, local, or federal, has already had their zombie apocalypse preparedness training. They've already done their practice. The CDC has had a zombie apocalypse preparedness website up for the last 5 years. Now they've reduced it to a PDF cartoon. Even in the Amazon Web Services contract, the force majeure clause, I believe it's Article 41, states that we're not liable for damages in case there's a zombie apocalypse. This is coming, folks, and the serious adverse event report Pfizer put out post-marketing, they had put out as part of a FOIA. The number one serious adverse event was the 1p36 gene deletion. You look up the symptomology for that, it is the elimination of the frontal cortex and a propensity to bite. What's very odd about this was the symptom post-vaccination. That disease is a congenital disease. It means you're born with it. So how is it then possible that this is the number one serious adverse event from the Pfizer shots?
There you have it, folks. And I'm just going to say this right now as clearly as I can. Folks, things are not going to get back to normal. There's going to be a never-ending variant scam. There's going to be inflation and wars and rumors of wars. And now maybe new shutdowns because of global warming so that we cut our carbon footprint. Did you hear that one? And we got the coming food shortages. You know, we even heard it out of the mouth of Biden himself on food shortages. I think I have that clip. Biden food, let's see if I can find it here. Biden admits food shortages are coming to all of us. Listen to this.
Nothing more to report. With regard to food shortages, yes, we did talk about food shortages. And it's going to be real. The price of these sanctions is not just imposed upon Russia. It's imposed upon an awful lot of countries as well, including European countries and our country as well.
And so it's all being blamed on Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. It's all we hear. But what if it's actually an engineered food shortage? What if it's all part of their Great Reset plan? Well, guess what, folks? It is.
What? What? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
Well, I'm as serious as this beautiful sun we have out today here on Saturday in western Pennsylvania. I'm serious, folks. It's all part of a grand master plan, a master plan of the Luciferians. Now, it's multifaceted, folks. You know, it's from the liberal sexuality we have in our country now, which we're going to cover in much more detail. Did you know, as I opened the show with folks, that they are using sex as a weapon in this unconventional warfare? And I'll get into that more. And I'll get into more of this whole food thing in the Back to the Future episode. Now, they truly believe we're powerless to stop them. You remember I played that clip of Klaus Schwab's top advisor, Yuval Noah, what's his last name, Harari, saying that the poor will die? Let's listen to that again, just so I can frame what I want to talk about now concerning the engineered famine.
I think once you're superfluous, you don't have power. Again, we are used to the age of the masses of the 19th and 20th century, where we saw all these successful massive uprisings, revolutions, revolts. So we are used to thinking about the masses as powerful. But this is basically a 19th century, a 20th century phenomenon. I don't think that the masses, even if they somehow organize themselves, stand much of a chance. We are not in Russia of 1917 or in 19th century Europe. What we are talking about now is like a second industrial revolution, but the product this time will not be textiles or machines or vehicles or even weapons. The product this time will be humans themselves. We are basically learning to produce bodies and minds. Bodies and minds are going to be, the two main products of the next wave of all these changes. That is optional. Again, and if you think about it from the viewpoint of the poor, it looks terrible because throughout history, death was the great equalizer. The big consolation of the poor throughout history was that, okay, these rich people, they have it good, but they're going to die just like me. But think about a world, say, in 50 years, 100 years, where the poor people continue to die, but the rich people, in addition to all the other things they get, they also get exemption from death. Once you really solve a problem like direct brain-computer interface, when brains and computers can interact directly, for example, that's just one example, that's it. That's the end of history. That's the end of biology as we know it. Nobody has a clue what will happen once you solve this. If life can basically break out of the organic realm into the vastness of the inorganic realm, and you cannot even begin to imagine what the consequences will be because our imagination at present is organic.
Folks, it's very sad. And I think that a lot of people have been immobilized through corrupted lifestyles. And anything from pride to anger to lust will quench your spirit. And then I think there's a whole group of sanctified individuals, Christians, Bible-believing, born again, Jesus is coming Christians, and I love them. They're my brothers and sisters. But sadly, I think that their hope of the rapture, the pre-tribulation rapture, has immobilized so many of them, causing them to avoid even preparing for anything. And I think we could thank the National Council of Churches for that. And maybe next week we can talk about the National Council of Churches. I'm writing that down. We'll slip that into the show somewhere next week, provided the Lord's willing. But the media won't tell you any of this because the media is owned by the globalists and so much for the fourth date. Now, Peace did a very good clip 22, 1 minute and 17 seconds. Just listen to Greg. Put my mute to just listen to what he has to say about the famine. 22.
The term bread and circuses comes from an ancient Roman poet describing how the people are governed, not by excellence in public service, but by food and distractions, like a herd of livestock. Today's circuses can be found on Twitter, a reflection of the human herd's short attention span. Meaningless distractions to keep everyone calm while their food supply is being destroyed. While fools joke about Biden doing a horrible job, his administration is doing such an efficient job of destroying America that anyone running in 2024, if there is an election, will have to run on the Build Back Better platform. Starvation has been used as a weapon of mass destruction for years. In just a two-year period, Stalin's communist government murdered over 3 million people in Ukraine by simply pulling the strings of bureaucracy, sanctions. The Ethiopian counterinsurgency burned crops and food stores, airily bombed food markets, and restricted trade. They then began a resettlement plan that killed at least 80,000 people with further starvation. The U.S. State Department murdered over 500,000 women and children in Iraq with starvation by sanctions. And this is exactly what is happening in America today. The Biden administration's sanctions against Russia are only succeeding at killing more innocent people all over the world by dramatically cutting down the worldwide food supply. There is already a significant wheat, fuel, and fertilizer shortage, which is obviously going to affect everything else, starting with fresh produce and livestock. But in order to completely collapse the food economy, they'll have to start destroying food packing plants as well, so that there is nothing left on the shelves for you to eat.
There have been confirmed over a dozen disabling accidents at food plants in the last month, over a dozen.
Absolutely, and we're talking about some really significant plants. The Taylor Farms facility in Salinas, California was completely destroyed by a fire last week. We've had two major potato processing plants in Belfast, Maine and Warden, Washington that were completely gutted, which is happening at a time where we already have a potato shortage globally. You were talking about the onion supply at that Rio Fresh, but it's not just produce plants. Last month there was a fire that took out a Nestle food plant out in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and that's impacting frozen food brands like Hot Pockets or Stouffer's, which maybe you might buy if you can't get fresh food from a warehouse that just exploded.
Those still satiated with their bread and circuses are soon going to start getting hungry, and it's because America is under siege, being destroyed from within by a corrupt government while the people seek fairness on Twitter. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Folks, I've been telling you since the stolen election of 2020 that we are literally at war. Now, this is an unconventional war, also known as unconventional warfare. Now, our enemies are the Luciferian globalists. So we know who they are, folks, and we outnumber them thousands to one. But they think that we're powerless. We just heard that. Okay? So our enemies, the globalists, we know who they are, and they are thieves. They're all thieves. They're in office. They're in both parties, folks. They're the rhinos of the Republican Party. So don't think if there's a great red wave coming this fall that we're all fine. What happened the last time the quote-unquote rhino Republicans controlled Congress? So they're thieves in office in both parties, and we need to be aware of that. This is who they are, and they're at the top. Think about it. Why wouldn't they know about all these things that are happening right now? They have access to all the Department of Agriculture results, all the economic numbers. They know what's going on. They're the ones that are actually formulating this. So our elected officials are taking the globalists' money, you know, from China and from the banksters, to run this globalist takeover known as the Great Reset. And the only reason they haven't been arrested yet and heads haven't rolled is because no elected scum will do a thing to stop this. I'm telling you, folks, the head of the snake has to be cut off. They're all in on this, and it's obvious. Those on the left, those on the right, those who think are on your side. I mean, I'm talking about people like Trump and Cruz and DeSantis and even Senator Paul. They're all in on it. Haven't you figured that out yet? It's just a different flavor of ice cream. You know, when ice cream companies make chocolate ice cream, they take all of the leftovers from the other runs and they blend them in and then just load it up with cocoa. And it masks all the other flavors, strawberry, vanilla, anything else. Haven't you figured out that's what they're doing? These are fake heroes, people like Trump and Paul and Cruz and DeSantis. They're in on it. Otherwise, they would be talking about some of this stuff. I'm telling you, folks, this once great nation and we the people are done unless we stand up and clean them all out. You really think DeSantis is fighting for you in Florida? Think about this for a minute. Have you ever heard him in any of his speeches that sound so great mention Operation Lockstep from the 2010 Rockefeller report? How about Event 201? Has he brought that up? That's public information, folks. How about Crimson Contagion or ID 2020? To name a few. Good old Governor DeSantis, who's playing the other side of the coin, hasn't mentioned any of those. Get a clue, folks. They're all in on it. That's my point. So if we, the people, truly want to stop it, we've got to cut the head off this snake. Now, remember, there's literally billions of us and only thousands of them. These bankers and these globalists must have 100% loyalty on everybody in these positions of power, from media to government to all these institutions, and they have to be able to trust each and every one of them around them. It only takes one trusted person near these globalists who's willing to save humanity to stop all of this. So my prayer is for someone with some guts to stand up and work with us to save humanity. Otherwise, the only thing that's going to turn this around is the return of Jesus Christ. But folks, I don't buy that pre-trib rapture nonsense. That's a fairly new narrative. And I know Jesus is going to return, but he said to occupy till he does. And I just don't see people occupying. Now, Klaus Schwab's mentors, different leaders around the world, he has that young global leader school. You know, and Klaus Schwab, he's not the brainchild behind this. So next week, provided the Lord's willing, I want to talk about Klaus Schwab's supporters and how he got started. That might blow your mind. But right now, folks, there's another great Reese report, and it sounds like I'm working with Greg Reese, and I'm not. It's titled Greg Reese, The Megadeth Intellectuals of the Great Reset. It's about a 4-minute and 50-second clip. Just have a listen, and you can start to see what I was talking about and how this all fits together.
Johnny Vedmore recently published an article exposing the hidden history of the mysterious World Economic Forum, who is currently waging war against the world with their Great Reset. Founder and director Klaus Schwab's three mentors were the most influential people in America's thermonuclear deterrence program, as well as leading proponents of a one-world government. Henry Kissinger recruited Klaus Schwab at the Harvard International Seminar, which was funded by the CIA. During this time, Kissinger was focused on global governance and depopulation. But it was with the Council on Foreign Relations that Kissinger became a major player by wargaming psychological operations involving America's growing thermonuclear weapons arsenal and writing the book on nuclear weapons and foreign policy. John K. Galbraith was a highly influential economist who helped Klaus Schwab create the World Economic Forum. Galbraith was an economist at Harvard who traveled to Germany in 1938 to study land policies under Hitler's National Socialist government. From there, he went to work on an advisory committee for FDR's New Deal. After World War II ended, his work shifted into nuclear weapons. Galbraith was tasked with evaluating the overall economic effects of the wartime bombing. He interrogated Nazi war criminal Albert Speer and was sent to Hiroshima and Nagasaki to evaluate the damage caused by the nuclear weapons attack. By 1968, Galbraith had joined Kissinger in his pursuit of a one-world government. And it was during this time that Kissinger introduced Galbraith to Klaus Schwab, along with Herman Kahn, who in 1967 suggested subverting democracy by training a select group of global leaders, which later became the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders. Both Kissinger and Galbraith were heavily involved in the religion of thermonuclear deterrent warfare. But Herman Kahn was, as the New Yorker puts it, the heavyweight of the Megadeth intellectuals, and is commonly referred to as the real Dr. Strangelove. Kahn wrote the official military policy on nuclear deterrence and believed that if everyone had nuclear weapons, the world would know peace. By the late 60s, Kahn was pushing for a European Union and joined Galbraith in 1970 on a European speaking tour to support Klaus Schwab's recruitment drive for the first European Management Symposium, now known as the World Economic Forum. And while they were doing that, Klaus Schwab helped merge his father's nuclear weapons company into a company that he then directed to illegally build nuclear weapons for the South African government. In 1972, the Club of Rome published The Limits to Growth, which planted the seeds of the depopulation agenda. And while Kahn, Kissinger, and Galbraith helped Schwab get started, what really brought him the international support he was hoping for was when he introduced the ideas of depopulation. In 1972, the Club of Rome's founder was invited by Schwab to make the keynote speech in 1973. As controversial as it was, even Herman Kahn opposed it, the World Economic Forum suddenly caught the attention and financial support of powerful elitists everywhere and blew up to what it has become today. The article suggests that Schwab's supervillain persona is a deliberate marketing tactic to gain the attention from those who seek power and wealth to join Klaus Schwab as stakeholders in society. The author believes that the World Economic Forum is reaching its maximum level of expansion before its inevitable collapse, because eventually people will fight back. But they already know that, and all they really seem to care about is world government, depopulation, and thermonuclear war. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
That was the best synopsis on this global cabal being worked or manipulated through the World Economic Forum, directed by Klaus Schwab. But again, he is not at the top, folks. He is a puppet of the Luciferians behind the scenes pulling the strings. Now, I'll cover that in more detail next week, provided the Lord's willing. But right now, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta, but I don't see her. Henrietta, you know you're... There she is. Hey, Henrietta. Folks, you know in this segment it's all about preparedness. Now, if this food shortage does manifest as part of their multifaceted, unconventional warfare against we the people, we need to be prepared to grow food. I'm putting some food up, some dry goods, talk to you about how we can put victory gardens in. Now, if you have more land, a lot of this won't be able to be done by hand or even with a walk behind rototiller or a garden tractor. You're going to need some other equipment. Today, what I'd like to do is talk about farming with an ATV. And I don't know if people even realize that you could farm with an ATV, but you can literally farm with an ATV. Alvin, I told you you weren't supposed to speak out of turn. But yes, Alvin, we can literally farm with an ATV. So it is possible to do some small-scale farming, you know, bigger than the garden plot, with an ATV. So as we prepare for the globalist engineered food shortage, we can definitely farm with an ATV. And I'd like to just talk about that a little bit today. Now, there are some limitations, and an ATV would not be suitable for all tasks and situations. Now, maybe some of you out there are sitting there scratching your head saying, well, Bro Ken, what's an ATV? Well, ATV stands for all-terrain vehicle. It's also known as a quad or a four-wheeled off-road vehicle. It has control similar to a motorcycle, so it's different than the ute, which is the side-by-side with a steering wheel, more like a car. And you ride this like a motorbike, but it has four wheels. Now, the first ones, and some of the best in my opinion, are made by Honda. In fact, I own two of them. Terry and I own two. We own a Foreman, and we own a Ranger, a Rancher, I mean. The one's a 400cc. The other's about a 530cc. And I'm telling you, folks, these are low-torque workhorses. Now, in the recent years, people like me who have always relied on big diesel tractors have discovered that the features the ATV offers are very capable in various situations, maybe difficult terrain where you can't get a bigger tractor in. So an ATV can traverse soil and mud almost as good as a four-wheel drive diesel tractor. It can cross deep ruts, climb over rocks, and with the right skills, you can go up and down steep slopes. Folks, I mow a very steep field with a pull behind on my 400cc Rancher. And yet, just yesterday, I used it to grade my driveway with a ratchet rake pull behind. We've talked about that. Yes, I did get that. Maybe I'll do a review on next week about the ratchet rake. Just taking some notes for next week's ratchet rake review in Coop Talk. I'll let you know what I think about it next week. So these ATVs are really good at it. So what can you accomplish with it? Well, in addition to the mobility and the on and off attachments, much easier than a tractor, because the instruments, the attachments are lighter. It's easier to get them on and off. You don't have to deal with a three-point hitch. Typically, it's just a clevis pin in a simple hitch. So you, in some ways, you can view your ATV as a mini tractor. You can do quite a few things with it. You can carry and pull. And as you get these attachments, there's all sorts of multifaceted applications. You can plow with it. You can trailer, you can mow, like I've mentioned. You can even plow snow, which I do routinely. Now, I used to do all of this with my big diesel tractors, but I find that I'm actually getting it done faster. And people said when I first started doing this back in 2008, well, Bro Ken, there's just no longevity. Well, my 400cc Honda is running as good today as it did back then, and I mow and I plow with it. And people are saying, that engine will never stand up. Well, folks, been 15 years and it's still going. Plus you can get other attachments like manure spreaders and various field blades and cultivators. You can get a hay dolly. Now, I wouldn't move those really big round bales, but you could do a good bit with it. So with this very fast advancement in terms of the attachments and the power and the performance, you really ought to consider an ATV. And some of you may have one, you know, for recreational use. Now, some of those little racers and that aren't as good. And in my opinion, because of the technology developed by Honda, I believe it's the best. Questions, folks, and you do have one or you want to get into this sort of victory farming to prepare for this food crisis, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and I'll help you out with what I've learned. And maybe you can be light and salt in your little corner of the world as you have food that you can help others with. But right now, folks, it's time for our Hopium Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium. Now, I put this next story in the Hopium Report because I am hoping that the left will expose themselves. Just typing in the next clip here. Sorry for that, folks. Now, I'm hoping the left's going to expose themselves for the control freaks they truly are. You know, the word out this week everywhere was that Elon Musk bought Twitter, you know? Libs across the media are just freaking out over this. So I'm hoping they're going to expose themselves for what they are. Then along comes this article, this clip from MSNBC's Ari Melber talking about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter this week. And this wasn't irony, folks. He gives away the left's game. This is exactly what they've been doing since 2015 and even earlier on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. I mean, the most popular tweeter of all time, President Trump, was deplatformed from Twitter. So listen to this 30-second clip from Ari Melber from MSNBC, basically telling you what he's afraid is going to happen with the conservatives on these platforms. It's the very thing that they've been doing. This is right out of Rules for Radicals. Accuse your opposition of what you're actually doing. Listen to it.
You own all of Twitter or Facebook or what have you. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't even have to be transparent. You could secretly ban one party's candidate or all of its candidates, all of its nominees, or you could just secretly turn down the reach of their stuff and turn up the reach of something else, and the rest of us might not even find out about it till after the election. Elon Musk said this is all to help people because he is just a free speech, philosophically clear, open-minded helper.
Now, I agree with the argument that the First Amendment really wasn't ever intended for totally unfettered free speech under all conditions. You know, like standing up in a movie theater in the midst of a movie or during a performance on stage and yelling fire when there's no fire. And then when you have a panic and people are trampled at the exits trying to get out and you're under trial and you say, well, it's my free speech right? I can say anything I want. Well, yeah, responsibly. And you don't want to promote violence and you don't want to show abuse of children and the weak. You don't want to do that. But there isn't an instruction from the government, or I should say from we the people to the government, that says that the government shall make no laws that abridge the freedom of speech. So a question I have is, how's that going so far? How about Section 230? You know about Section 230, don't you, folks? So these social media platforms are hiding under the skirts of Section 230, claiming that they have no liability because they do not edit. They are merely a platform for the expression of others' views. But that's exactly what they're doing. They are editing. So who's going to decide what and who gets to use these platforms and what is acceptable speech on their platforms? Well, folks, they've crossed the line at this point. Now they're putting in the Ministry of Truth. Yeah, you probably have heard about that. The Biden administration has just started the Ministry of Truth. Maybe we can talk more about that next week, too. But I just want to ask you a question. Who's going to do this? Who needs special permissions? Why do these social media platforms get all of these protections against all sorts of liability from libel and slander, and what have you? Why do they get this? So here's the point. It's an either-or type of statement. Either they're the modern town square and they're not responsible for any of the content under public discourse, which means that anybody, as long as they're not doing those couple things, yelling fire in a crowded theater when there's no fire, promoting hate towards a group, and I mean real hate, like going out and kill them, not just opposing their position on marriage or opposing their position concerning their quote-unquote rights. I'm talking about hate speech, you know, like where you say, go out and kill these people. Other than that, there should be a free and fair public discourse if they are nothing more than a modern town square. However, if they are publishers, publishers aren't protected under Section 230. They're not protected from slander, libel, discrimination, lawsuits. They're not immune to the laws regarding such issues. So which is it, folks? And that's what needs to be resolved. Now, I have a theory on what Elon Musk is using Twitter for. I think it's part of his Neuralink platform. I think he's going to need it when he when he links the brain to the cloud. He needs a platform, and I think he's going to use Twitter as that platform. But that's just a theory. Right now, it's time for the Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
So I have a good clip here. This is a clip of a trans person triggered over being misgendered by their gynecologist. Okay, so this is a trans man or a woman pretending to be a man through hormone therapy. And they're just playing a little clip for their viewers on how offended they were when their OBGYN referred to it as a she.
I had a gynecologist appointment today to get an Explanon implant in my arm, and which is birth control, by the way. And my gynecologist is usually pretty respectful. I've only had two appointments, but you know, she's respected me as a trans person. Well, today, as I was checking out for my appointment, I was standing right there in front of her. And she starts talking to the woman, the nurse that's checking me out. And she misgendered me right in front of me. I didn't say anything because it was 10 o'clock in the morning. That's early for me, and this didn't seem worth it. Maybe I'll confront her in my next appointment in 6 months, if I remember.
Folks, did you ever notice how these female-to-male transitions speak with a nasal voice?
I had a gynecologist appointment today to get an Explanon.
And the male to females with a falsetto. Now, at first glance, all this may just appear to be plain absurd. And then you would say, well, I understand why you put it into the absurdity report, Broken. But I'm telling you, there's a much more sinister agenda behind all this. In fact, it's deeply spiritual. We're going to cover that at the end of this message today. Remember, I opened with the bombshell that sex is actually an enemy, a weapon used by our enemy. Now, I have another report from Greg Reese, and it's the real agenda of the transgenders. And the Reese report on transgenderism, it's a 4 minute and 30 second clip. And then I'm going to build upon this, provided the Lord's willing, through the rest of the show. So stay with me on this, folks.
If you are dumbfounded by the motivation to systemically seduce all children into thinking that they can change what sex they are, then it is because you are a more balanced human being. And if you think tricking a child into believing they were born an accident is evil, then you are likely a person who believes in God, spirit, or love, whichever word you are more comfortable with. When it comes to belief in God, people fall into three categories: the faithful, the agnostic, and the atheist. The faithful believe in God. The atheist doesn't. And the agnostic is open-minded either way. Both the faithful and agnostic can be accepting of this unseen spirit realm, which allows them the ability to strive towards balance with nature. But others are at war with it. The atheist will argue that there is no proof of God, and therefore there is no God, which is nothing more than materialism, the doctrine that nothing exists except for physical matter. Rudolf Steiner described two types of evil within the hearts of man, luciferic and Ahrimanic. Luciferic is the evil force that wants to be free of the laws of nature, and Ahrimanic wants to obsessively control the laws of nature. We can also describe these energies as satanic and materialistic. While the Satanist believes in God and the materialist may not, they both want to dismantle nature and control it. And they are no longer hiding in the shadows. Their radical war against nature is now out in the open for all to see.
But control of data might enable human elite to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design.
The birth of a living human soul comes as a result of the sexual union between a man and a woman. This sexual union is perhaps the most potent spiritual energy that humans can achieve. It is sacred and divine, which is why the evil forces who seek to play God have been subverting it for decades with pornography, abortion, and the welfare system. They seek to replace the mother and father and control this sexual power with technology, making woman their number one target. California is introducing a bill that would allow mothers to kill their babies up to 7 days after birth, completely demoralizing what it means to mother a child. And if castrating a man can legally make him a woman, then can mutating a human legally make him non-human? Many are discussing whether or not transhumans will qualify for human rights in the future. And with the mother out of the way, who will teach them about love? A child created and raised by the state will be subjected to the authority of the state from birth till death. This is the ultimate goal, and it now seems to be within their grasp. Embryos have been created in laboratories without human sperm or eggs. China's Suzhou Institute of Biomedical Engineering and Technology has created a system to raise human embryos with an artificial intelligence that monitors and adjusts the nutrition, carbon dioxide, and other levels within an artificial womb. The system was originally created to bring the birth rate in China back on track after its disastrous one-child policy. But it's just another step towards dismantling nature and playing God. And so it's good that you see this all as insane. But it would really be great if we could all stop these psychopaths before they kill us all. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
You know, folks, science supports male/female gender, not LGBTQ, just like science supports the biblical timescale. However, we have this false dichotomy now in the West, and it's been perpetrated between the Bible and quote-unquote science. It's like you can't have both. And this is something that started with John William Draper. He wrote this book called The History of Conflict Between Religion and Science. And Draper's book is a classic, and I read that long time ago. And I just, you know what? That might be a good Ken Corner segment next week, talking about the history of conflict between religion and science. Now, this book had been ridiculed by modern historians of science, and it remains influential regardless of their criticism due to the fact that so many people. Now, the sad thing is that a lot of intellectuals have this gravitation towards materialism, which is nothing more than saying all that exists in all of reality is nothing more than matter and the motion of matter. Now, despite these patent absurdities concerning the evolutionist claim that you either have to be anti-Bible or anti-science, you can't be both science and a Bible believer. Well, folks, guess what? I am. I'm an accomplished scientist with 20 international, national, domestic patents, successful businessman, all sorts of technologies that we're using, employing people. And I believe the Bible's true. So what's up with that? Well, that's the false dichotomy, that you can't have science and a biblical or faith-based mindset, or you're crazy. And that's the absolute lie from the pits of hell. But right now we have to keep moving. It's time for Ken's Corner.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now, folks, I've been talking a lot on this show about transhumanism and the integration of man and machine. talked about Patrick Woods and his futurist warnings and all the different things with technocracy now. You know, Patrick Woods, a great researcher. Sister Kathy tried to get him on the show. I don't think we ever did get him on, but that's a story for another day. So transhumanism, and we've heard this from some of Klaus Schwab's advisors, it promises that soon Homo sapiens will become a new species directed by evolution. Now, Mr. Harari, you know, Yuval Noah Harari, or however you say his last name, Klaus Schwab's advisor, says that there is intelligent design, but it's not some god. It's us. And I'm telling you, this whole LGBT trans is part of this transhumanism. Now, currently they use, or they allow you to use, and they're even putting it into health insurance plans now. They're allowing you to use cosmetic and plastic surgery, hormonal therapy, to give the individual the power to transform themselves into something different. Well, this is just creating the mindset, folks. You know, transhumanism promises nanorobotics and synthetics and new technology all merging together to allow people to become just about anything they imagine to be. I mean, the tattoo subculture has this sub-subculture known as implants. So people are implanting all sorts of things under their skin to create all sorts of new images. There's a subculture for slitting their tongues so they have a serpent-like appearance. And they're using plastic surgeon to create serpent-like eyes. So the new normal now for our species is to devalue and demonize and call into question what it means to be human. I just saw Gons tweeted that the new human is going to be human techno. That's the integration of man and machine. Now, they're marketing this all as something far better than just being what God created, Homo sapien. And there's this blog out, the Lost Sends, blogspot.com. And there's a blog article out there titled, "The Global Elite Dedicated to Evil and Most Practical Leader, Political Leaders Sign a Globalist Pact for the New Humanity 2.0. What Hitler could not achieve by selective breeding, sterilizing, and extermination can now be easily achieved through gene editing." Now, folks, that's why they're pushing for the jab. There are latent technologies in there that will be triggered by 5G, will be triggered by another shot, will be triggered by some other harmonized technology to create these augmented humans. So now the term out there for the unvaccinated are the purebloods. And it looks like this mRNA technology and the vector DNA jabs are an open admission by these globalists that they're using it for human augmentation. Remember I mentioned that the Business Week article where mRNA technology is going to be used to fight cancer? Folks, it's all here. And I'm telling you, I've been seeing this coming for 30 years, and we have to wake up and be aware of it. But what's sad is that they're promoting all of these liberal policies on sex, and we want to start teaching our five-year-olds what it means to be queer. You think this is all just because there's something good there? No, it's to quench the spirit. And if you get into these deviant sexual practices, your spirit is quenched, folks. Now, it may seem so nice. I can do anything I want to express myself sexually, but at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're quenching your spirit. You're poisoning your soul. But more on that later. Right now, it's time for Back to the Future. Where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. So in this episode, folks, let's wind the clock back to 1974 and Henry Kissinger's plan for food control genocide. Now, this was first published on December 8th, 1995 in an issue of the Executive Intelligence Review. And it was titled Kissinger's 1974 Plan for Food Control Genocide. And it was written by Joseph Bruda. So back on December 10th, 1974, the U.S. National Security Council under Henry Kissinger completed a classified 200-page study titled National Security Study Memorandum 200, Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for U.S. Security and Overseas Interests. Now, I know it's a mouthful, but basically what the study falsely claimed is that population growth in the so-called lesser developed countries, or the LDCs as they're referred to, is a grave threat to U.S. national security. So this plan was the officially adopted policy for population control, and this happened in 1975 under the Ford administration, and it was codified or brought into executive action through NSSM 200, which outlined this covert plan to reduce population growth in these countries where their birth control was non-existent. And, you know, we have Bill Gates talking about the fact that he can reduce population through vaccines. But they also use war and famine to create population control. Now, none other than Brent Scowcroft, okay, who replaced Kissinger as the National Security Advisor, same post Scowcroft held in the Bush administration that Kissinger held prior to that under Gerald Ford and Nixon. These folks were put in charge of the plan that the then CIA director George Bush had ordered to get this all into action. And they drew in the secretaries of state, treasury, defense, and agriculture. And they had all these bogus arguments that Kissinger was pushing. And none of it was really original, because it goes back to King George VI plan in 1944 under the Royal Commission on Population to control future growth of populations for national security interests. So all that Kissinger did was go back to what the Brits did in 1944 and spruce it up a bit. Now, the commission, this was the commission, the Royal Commission on Population, found that Britain was gravely threatened by population growth. And folks, I remember back in high school in the 70s, my advanced placement classes, that's all they talked about. Population explosion, population explosion. That's all they talked about. And it's a threat to the growth of human society, and we have to control it. So you have this document coming out by the Brits in 44, and then you have NSSM 200 coming out by the U.S. on how they're going to control it. And they targeted 13 key countries as special political and strategic of special political and strategic interest. India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, Turkey, Nigeria, Egypt, Ethiopia, Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia. And they claimed that population explosion in these specific countries was very worrisome. So they practiced some of this. That was back in the 70s, okay? And you know about some of the famines in Ethiopia and all that. That was all planned, folks. Now let's wind the clock up to today. So what's happening? Well, J.D. Rucker has been all over this. We played J.D. at the beginning of the show. He interviewed Dr. Lee Mang-Yan concerning the second pandemic that she is concerned may happen. So over the past few weeks, J.D.'s been all over this coming food shortage. Now, a lot of people were skeptical and just called this conspiracy theory. You're crazy. But J.D. disagreed. He is convinced that food shortages are destined to hit the American public very soon. That's why I'm pushing prepping, folks. That's why I'm telling you to put food away right now, storable food. That's why I'm telling you to get prepared to grow food. That's why I'm telling you to be networked and know who you can rely on in your local communities. Maybe somebody grows potatoes. Somebody's raising rabbits. Somebody has cattle. You all need to know who each other is or are, so that you can trade. And then maybe your local grocery store that can't get supplies anymore becomes the trading post. We've talked about all this. So J.D. lists seven causes of the coming food shortage in America. Now, this Ukrainian-Russian war is a scapegoat, but there is some truth in there, because both of those nations do supply a significant amount of grain, anywhere from, say, 10 to 30%. But here's the more alarming issue. They also supply some of the precursors and the petrochemical technology needed for the agricultural fertilizers. So that's legit. Then this bird flu, you know, there were 30 million chickens and turkeys killed so far here in the U.S. And have you seen what's going on with chicken and egg prices right now? That's real. There was just a big poultry producer out in Iowa that wiped out 5 million birds yesterday or this week and then laid off 200 workers. And then we have, of course, we have pandemic theater, you know, with all the lockdowns and all the crazy there. And we have what happened after that is you have all the shortages because people aren't making the packaging material to put the food in. People aren't making the aluminum cans to put the beverages in. You have all of these shortages. How about the cat food shortage right now, folks? And part of that isn't because they can't process cat food. That's pretty easy. Problem is they can't get the little aluminum cans to put the cat food in. And then we've got the food processing facilities that have been destroyed. There's, what, 30 of them now? And then, of course, China, who's been hoarding grain since 2019. China now holds 69% of the world's corn reserves, 60% of the rice reserves, and 51% of the world's wheat reserves. This is from USDA data, folks. And you know what the U.S. has? About 3 or 4 months. Plus, we have the supply chain crisis. And it's getting worse, not better. You know, we used to pay about $3,000 for a 20-foot container from China. And we bring our marbles in that we melt to make fiberglass out of. We're now paying $25,000 a container. We pay more for the container than the value of the marbles inside the container. And that's not sustainable. And then there's this big push now from the Biden regime to get more ethanol into the gasoline, which is going to ruin a lot of the older cars' engines, which, oh, you'll have to go out and buy a car. Oh, but you can't get a car. You see the hypocrisy in all this, folks? And this ethanol production is one of the most – ethanol production for transportation is one of the most wasteful methods to produce energy for vehicles. So you take diesel, you plant fields, and you could grow – all sorts of grain crops to feed people and livestock, but you take it and you mash it and you ferment it and you distill it and you make ethanol. And what it does is it just drives the prices of all the food staples higher and higher. So in conclusion, I don't think we have to debate whether or not J.D. Rucker and what I've been pushing is right or wrong. Just assume it's right, folks, and act accordingly. Prepare. I don't want to debate whether I'm right or wrong. Here's my point. What's the harm if I'm wrong? What if there isn't a food shortage? Well, then you have some extra food. You can share it with people in need. You'll have it for a rainy day. You'll have some equipment that you can make your property look nicer. Ah, you'll have some pets. You can name the rabbits then. But my point is, if you're not prepared, and this food shortage does hit, the information and the encouragement I've been giving you and people like J.D. Rucker have been giving you is priceless. So we need to get out there, and we need to prepare. Now, I don't know if there's much we can do to stop all this, folks. You know, you can be aware, and that's the point. So we could argue all day long whether there's going to be a food crisis, whether the Great Reset is going to stay on track or not. But I'm telling you, right now is the time to stock up and spread the word, because people could die from all this. And like I said, while there's not much we can do to stop it, we can mitigate the effects. Yet sadly, most people I see out there have their lamps out. They're in the dark, so to speak. There's no direction. There's no guiding light. There's no light of truth showing them the way. And you know the big reason? Sex. That's right, folks. Sex. I said it. So now that I have your attention, I want to tell you, folks, we're at war. And that's the truth. We're at war. And there's nothing...
What?
Paul, I ask you not to interrupt during this portion of the show, but we are at war. And one of the weapons used by our enemy is sex. Now, the war isn't a conventional war at this point. typically they become conventional wars, but right now it's a war for our soul and spirit. And just like kryptonite will disable Superman, I'm telling you folks, illicit sex will cripple our spirits, which the Bible tells us are the lamp of the Lord. Now, what does a lamp need, an oil lamp need to shed light? Well, it needs oil. And the Holy Spirit is symbolized as oil in the Bible. So when you put oil in the lamp and light it, you're given light. Spiritual realm, our spirits are defined as God's lamps, and God's Holy Spirit is defined as oil. And when you put oil in a lamp and light it, you have light. So we have spiritual light, which gives our souls, which are our mind, our will, and our emotions, ability to see. Now, when the enemy uses sex as a primary weapon, it's a method they use, as Jesus warns us, to come to kill, steal, and destroy. So let me ask you a question. How's your sex life? Is it sanctified or is it sinful? Well, I'm telling you, folks, if it's sinful, it's crippling you or quenching your spirit. Now, the Bible asks us some questions about our sex life in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 15 through 18. And then in 19 and 20, he gives us some direction. So he opens with this question. St. Paul asks, don't you realize that your bodies are actually part of Christ? You know, we're members of the body, fitly joined. The church is the body of Christ. Should a man take his body, which is part of Christ, and join it to a prostitute? Never. And don't you realize that if a man joins himself to a prostitute, he becomes one body with her? For the scriptures say the two are united into one. But if the person is joined to the Lord, he is one spirit with him. And then Paul goes on to say, run from sexual sin. No other sin clearly affects the body as this one does. For sexual immorality is a sin against your own body. And don't you realize that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and was given to you by God? You do not belong to yourself, for God bought you with a high price. Remember, Jesus died for you, folks. So we must honor God with our bodies. So what I'd like to do today, folks, is wrap this up by talking about safe sex and how unsafe sex is used by the enemy to kill, steal, and destroy. I'm telling you, folks, sex was never intended by God to be dangerous. He intended it to be a beautiful, wonderful, good, bonding thing between a man and his wife. But I'm telling you this, and this is the truth. Sex was intended by God to be exclusively between a man and a woman in the sacred bond of holy matrimony. Now, this doesn't include one-night stands, and it's not okay for two women or two men, like Klaus Schwab's top advisor, Nigel Noah, what's his name, Harry says. You know, there's a clip here. Play it. I do have some time, so let's play it. Here is Yuval Noah Harari. He's a lead advisor to Klaus Schwab. It's a minute and 50-second clip arguing against the Bible and the Ten Commandments. So just listen to this, thinking, and then we'll go on from there.
What is good and what is evil? What is a pious action and what is a sin? So in previous eras, again, you went to God or you went to the Pope or you went to the Bible. Let's say with the case of homosexuality. So in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church came and said homosexuality is a sin. Why? Because God said so. Because the Bible said so. Because the Pope said so. And this was the source of ethical authority. Nobody cared much what people actually felt about it. Now in the era of humanist ethics, the saying is, we don't care very much what God says or what the Bible says or what the Pope says. We want to know how people actually feel. If two men are in love and they both feel very happy with that and they don't harm anybody, so what could possibly be wrong with it? It's very simple. The highest authority in the field of ethics is the authority of human feelings. If humans feel good about something, and nobody feels bad about it, then it's good. Of course, there are some difficult questions also in humanist ethics. What happens if I feel good about something, let's say an extramarital affair, but my husband feels very bad about it? So whose feelings count for more? Then you have a dilemma, an ethical dilemma. You have a discussion. But the key point is that the discussion will be conducted in terms of human feelings, not in terms of divine commandments.
So there you have it. Bottom line, I'm telling you, folks, sex is a primary weapon of unconventional spiritual warfare. Yes, S-E-X. Sex is a weapon used against us, we the people. So now, if nothing else, I ought to have your attention. Or perhaps I even upset you. But it's not me that you should be upset with. Like I said, I didn't say this. God did. Plus, he also said this in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. Now, concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. And again, I didn't say that. God did. What we could call the sanctity of safe sex. Now, the Bible is very clear that God had set some very definite boundaries for the physical act of sex, and it's to be reserved for marriage and marriage alone. And that's marriage between a man and a woman. And without these clearly defined boundaries, folks, it's impossible to have a stable nation, a stable city, or even a stable family. These can simply not exist. And I'm telling you, folks, the Luciferian globalists know this. In fact, it's part of their plan to destroy Western civilization. And it's all in preparation for the Great Reset, where we will literally be slaves on their global plantation, owning nothing and being happy. So let's look at what God's given us as clear boundaries, not to harm us, but to help us and to protect us. And inside of these clearly defined boundaries, I'm telling you, sex is a wonderful gift from God. So sex is reserved as a means to joy and happiness in the married life. And it was God's plan to bring a man and woman into the sanctity of marital love to create a sense of oneness where two would become one. And we can call that the sanctity of safe sex. And then there's the selflessness of safe sex. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 3 and 4, let the husband render unto the wife the due benevolence, and likewise unto the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power, that's authority, of her own body, but the husband, and likewise all the husband hath not power of his own body, authority, but the wife. So there's a couple key words here, and the one I'd like to focus on is render. So it says, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise the wife also render to the husband. So term we hear called lust, and it's always talked about in terms of getting, whereas in real love, it's always known by truly giving. So here God uses the word render, and it literally means to give. So the sacred act of sex between a man and a woman is one of giving, not getting. And it's the husband who's mentioned first because the husband is typically the initiator. So let the husband give to the wife her due. And I'm telling you, folks, that's a kind, loving, sexual embrace that's due to her. And God created it to bond the husband and his wife. So there's a selflessness in this sanctified sex. But in addition to this selflessness and this sanctity, there's a security. In verse 5, Paul goes on and says, defraud ye not one the other, except to be with consent for time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again. That's coming together again sexually, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency or lack of self-control. So the thing, folks, is that in a healthy marriage, in a healthy sexual relationship, in that marriage, there should be a give and take. And that's very important. Now, what about the fact that you're single? Well, what if you are single? I don't have any marriage vows, so I should be able to go out and have a one-night stand. I should be able to go out and do whatever I want. I mean, it is my body. I should be able to just go out and do whatever I want. Wrong, folks. And here's why. When you do that, you put the lamp out. Then you're unable to discern. You're unable to see the wiles of the enemy. And that's what they want. So there's a benefit to a celibate single life. And please stay with me here because this is very interesting. Now, if you're thinking what I said, but I'm not married, and I should be able to do whatever I want. Be careful with that, folks. So what's the benefit of a single life? Well, it can be a very, let me say that differently. What's the benefit of a single celibate life? Well, that single celibate life can be a very good life. In verse 1, Paul wrote, "Now concerning these things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman." So anyways, that's just the way it is, okay? And I didn't say it. The Bible did. Now, it's okay if you're married, but you're going to lose a lot in that, you know? It's good for a man not to touch a woman. But a lot of people can't do that. Now, I have some sort of emergency in the house, folks. I don't know what's going on. So we're just going to have to cut this show short, and I'm going to have to see what's going on upstairs, okay? All right. So, folks, I love y'all, and we're going to have to wrap this show up right now, and we'll pick it up next week. So remember, that same spirit is Jesus from the grave. He lives in you.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in, and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times you are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus. Oh,